We're going to be talking with Chris Knutson. I won't say recently retired, but recently fled from the government and yes. practices law as an individual.
Private attorney now.
But a long time public defender. And, you know, my favorite thing about you doing that job is how you got inspired to do public defense.
I'm not sure what I told you.
I was going to say, there's a story here you're expected to deliver.
What did your father do for a living?
Oh, my father was, my father was a, he wasn't a full-time public defender. Minnesota has a hybrid system, which I think New Mexico should consider at some point. It allows private attorneys to take on 25%, 50%, or 75%, or 100% conflicts. Mm. And Minnesota, when their public defenders get what they've deemed as too heavy of a caseload, they start farming cases right. out to the private attorneys.
Well, doesn't that happen here too, some?
Not very often.
Just with conflicts?
It's conflicts, mostly okay. of interest. So once in a great while, the executive will say, you can farm out 15 cases. That happened recently, and we've got 15 attorneys, so you're like, okay.
15 attorneys now I have getting woefully underpaid.
Now I have 171 cases instead of 172.
Okay.
It's not very helpful.
Well, yeah, let's talk. I mean, let's talk a little bit about that. What is the typical caseload for the public defender's office here in Las Cruces?
It feels like misdemeanors are always like you're carrying 150 to 200 at a time.
Yeah.
Is the misdemeanor attorneys. It depends on the felony attorneys, because our senior felony attorneys get the more serious cases, which take more time, so they've got less of a load. So I think those attorneys sometimes have 80 to 100, okay. but there's felony attorneys definitely that are pushing 200. And our office is lucky that we are mostly fully staffed on our FTEs. Other offices are in real bad shape.
Pushing 200, meaning that they've got 200 individual cases that they're handling all at the same time?
Yes, yes.
That's crazy.
Well, that's what we're here to talk about.
From the outside looking in,
that's what we're here
crazy.
To talk about.
Yeah. yeah.
And the problem is we have a certain amount of FTEs, which are government positions for public defenders. And I'm sure you're aware of the study that Michael Stout sent us. Other states have done studies. In Oregon, they got done with their study, and they found out that attorneys – presently staffed would have to work 26 hours a day
to
ethically defend their clients. And that 7 days a week, not five, they would have to work 7 days a week, 26 hours. And so to meet that need, they said they would need double the amount of Oregon public defenders. Our study that we did in New Mexico found about the same numbers. So in Las Cruces, we have about 15 felony attorneys. No, 15 attorneys, I'm sorry. 15 attorneys total. And to adequately defend people, I think we would need about 30. And then we would be doing our job. We would be ethically always catching every motion, looking right. at all the discovery, no shortcuts.
Right.
And actually being able to take a vacation now and then without coming back and everything's on fire.
Yeah.
Articulate for people who are sitting there saying, oh, who cares, you know, those people are criminals anyway, and yeah, they got to get a defender, but why should we make sure they get real good defense?
Well, it's the Constitution, so if you don't care about the Constitution, and there's people like that, they stormed the White House, and so those people probably don't care. People that put on Ku Klux Klan outfits and walk around probably don't care. But I would think an average, reasonable citizen cares about our constitutional rights, and those rights are yours too. And so if other people aren't being defended adequately under the Constitution, their due process rights, that erodes our judicial system. So, and I think those people that you're talking about, I think they fail to realize how much of our judicial system is criminal cases. So according to the Center for State Courts Statistic Project, which was in 2020, so it's 7 years ago, but They found that in the United States, in most state courtrooms, criminal cases are 24% of the cases filed in state court. So, right, I don't know if people know that, is like criminal cases are our judicial system. And so of that 24%, you can probably guess how many are poor people and indigent mm-hmm. defendants and how many are minorities. So if you just don't care about that, I'm going to have a hard time convincing you we need more public defenders, because you would rather build more prisons and
right.
be what we are, is the largest population of incarcerated individuals in the world.
Well, and that kind of brings me to my next question, which I would argue probably the biggest change in New Mexico law over the last decade was getting rid of cash bonds. That the idea, if you didn't have the money, you just sit in jail until your trial comes up. And there's been a lot of pushback against that from the law enforcement community and the pro-public safety community, saying that we're just a revolving door. We're just, you know, putting these same people out, and the same people are committing the same crimes over and over again, and we're not able to address it. As somebody looking at it from the defense perspective, what is your response to that?
Well, I don't just look at it as a defense perspective,
yeah.
but I look at it as a society perspective.
Okay.
There is habitual criminals, and there always will be,
yeah.
and you'll release them, and they'll trespass again, or they'll shoplift. Yeah, that's always going to exist. What we're trying to address with the bond issues is people who still they're on the cusp of becoming homeless.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a lot of resources, and then they get thrown in jail. And I've seen it. It's a domino effect. They lose their job. I've had so many guys that are in jail, and they're like, I work at Arby's and –
Right.
And I'm like, well, are you still going to have your job? My boss told me if I'm not back today, no, I'm not going to have a job.
Right.
Or Domino's. Or, you know, these fast food places, they need to hire somebody. So anyway, they lose their job. If they have a family, they could lose their apartment, thrown out on the streets with their kids. Mm-hmm. You know, then what happens to those children? So that's the perspective I look at from is – if you keep somebody in jail and they're not a hardened criminal, as a society, we're going to have to take on more and more homeless people, more and more people that are then going to have to resort to more crimes. So,
yeah. And the argument I always had on cash bond is you say you have a company party, and on the way home from the company party, three people get pulled over: the company CEO, a mid-level manager, and the janitor.
Yeah.
They all get the same drunk driving ticket, right?
Yeah.
So the mid-level, the president pays the bond, doesn't even notice it's, you know, because he gets that money back when
right.
he goes to trial.
And he hires a private attorney that can get him right up.
Absolutely no impact on him at all. The mid-level manager pays the bond, but maybe he has to cancel his vacation that year because he's going to feel that money.
Yes.
The janitor sits in jail.
Sits in jail and might lose his janitor job.
Yeah. They all three committed the exact same offense, and they get very disparate, you know, outcomes. That's not fair. I mean, I just don't know.
No, it's not fair, but the only fair I know is the county fair.
Well, there are a few fair maidens out there.
Let me ask you about a bond situation that does not involve a public defender. We have a prominent politician and businesswoman who had a motor vehicle accident, left the scene, charged with leaving the scene and tampering with evidence, and maybe there'll be other charges. And the Judge Perea decided she stays in jail until trial. If you were following this, did that surprise you, and how do you think it'll go on appeal?
I didn't catch your she was leaving the scene of an accident, someone died?
Yes, she killed him. She was speeding pretty excessively.
Well, it's hard to comment on that without me knowing the history of this person,
okay.
because if she had no other offenses her entire life.
She'd been charged with racing on the streets.
Okay, well, I don't know that I agree with. If I'm the judge, I probably don't hold her no bond. In my opinion, the only time you really hold somebody no bond is when they're a flight risk. The rules are such a danger.
What he held was she's such a danger because nothing stops her speeding.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever I may think about that, and, you know, I understand his reasoning. I think it's not likely to stand up on appeal because it seems to me that a good lawyer that she can afford is probably going to say, you know, point out some ways that you could.
Well, the problem with that is that judges have so much discretion.
Yeah.
There's no.
On that issue, they have a lot.
I think I know another judge who would have released her. So it's just every judge. We have three criminal judges, as you know, and they're all very different in their rulings.
But in terms of the appellate courts, do they give a judge extra? I mean, they will overturn some things, but in certain situations, they give the judge a lot of extra leeway.
Yes.
And is that one of them?
I don't think the appellates will touch that one. I think they'll just uphold it because I think they want to preserve judges' rights to make that call. I think if it was somebody with no record and it was they trespassed at Walmart and they got held no bond, the appellates would quickly overthrow that. But somebody died here.
Abuse of discretion.
I mean, anytime somebody dies or you've used a weapon, a gun, not just – anytime in Las Cruces you use a gun or somebody dies, you're likely to be held without bond. I've told defendants that. I'm like, you know, get ready to be held without bond because there's a family that's going to come to court with that most times the person who died, and they're going to show up, and it's going to be about 20 of them staring at the judge. Don't give him bond.
Yep.
Him or her.
What can we do to try to redress the imbalance that everybody's happy to fund prosecutors and not so happy to fund public defense?
Well, we have to realize – we first have to realize that it's a crisis and that we care about it. If we don't care about it, we don't care about it. But as a society and a community, if we care about it, then – We're realizing there is a crisis. Public defenders' workload is too much, and they can't adequately defend people under the Constitution. As you know, under Gideon, people are you know. So there's a lot of things we could do. Obviously, the first one is increase funding, increase pay disparity. I have been saying for years that the public defenders' pay should be linked to the DA pay. Whatever the DAs are paid in the same kind of slot, public defenders should be paid that. Then you wouldn't have people saying there's a pay disparity. It seems unfair, if you're going to talk about a fair, unfair to pay prosecutors more than public defenders, period. I think you also have to reframe this in amount of – you have to decide what is a – overload in cases, and you have to address that. So that would take, I think, paying contract attorneys more and farming them out. I mean, I looked at the – I've applied for a contract now, by the way, so I'm about to get paid this kind of money. A fourth-degree felony, they're being paid $650. Attorneys, most of them are at least $200 an hour. Just, I mean, you're getting paid for a trial and everything for $650. I will disclose, I just was hired on a fourth degree, and I charged $5,000, and the person gladly paid it because they had money. So
– well, you're just talking about so many hours.
Yeah. And a first-degree felony, a murder, $900. That's what contract attorneys make on a murder. First-degree murder, I'm sorry, $6,500.
It probably works out to about $2 or $5 an hour or something.
I'm not sure what it works out to. I guess it depends on if it's a trial-worthy case. If it just goes to a quick plea, it's not horrible.
Right. But if you actually fight it and you And what if you need expert witnesses?
Absolutely. And you know, you got to realize, here's a glimpse of my world when I was a line attorney. You would have about, I remember I'd have about 170 cases, and I'd have court all day. And if I didn't have court, I had witness interviews. And if I didn't have that, I had motions that were just backlogged to file. And here calls this, you know, not so reasonable client, and he's being held on a simple drug possession, and he's got a ChatGPT motion he wrote that's 8 pages long, and he wants me to read it, and then he tells me he knows the Constitution better than me, and he knows the law, and I don't have time to read his 8-page ChatGPT motion because they're usually all wrong, by the way, and their sites are wrong, and they haven't seen whether that case has been overturned. And to really read that motion and sit down with that client would take 3 hours. And that's one of my 172 cases that I really can't afford, and that cuts into the other clients. So that's really the life of a public defender is you're spending a lot of time on things like that. And you know,
you mentioned motions, and obviously a lot of motions in the cases. Is it as true in criminal law as it is in civil law that you actually, the other side is trying to use up as much of your time as they can on nonsense, so you can't do the most important things you have to do?
Well, sure. Now you're getting me into district attorney land, and
no, but not in any specific.
Okay,
you know, I'm just.
Well, I want to take you to district attorney land.
I'll go to district attorney land.
Okay.
I see no difference between the old administration with Mr. Byers and the new one with Mr. Macias. They are still not reviewing their cases, not vetting their cases, and what is happening is, we get up to 2 weeks from trial, and that assistant DA finally looks at their case. They find out that their witness is in federal prison and has been there for 8 years, and then they want to dismiss their case or offer a good plea. And I've spent, or a PD has spent, months prepping that case. You're almost ready to trial. You're 2 weeks away. And the DA is offering you a misdemeanor. Well, your client's got to take it.
Right.
But what a waste of time.
Yeah.
And so that's a problem. It's a huge problem.
By the way, we'll have you back on the show with Fernando.
Oh, great! I don't mind.
I don't know if Fernando's going to agree to that.
I got to say he's trying. I really think he's got a good heart and he's trying. Yeah. But I don't know how you. They've got so many cases that are charged that really shouldn't have been charged. It's the truth. And we spend a lot of time, especially the misdemeanors, and we they end up being all dismissed because the witnesses don't show up or the
right.
I think if more could be done on the front end as to really vetting those cases and they shouldn't be, it feels like they're being charged by the police and not the district attorney's office. And so a lot of stuff ends up, like I said, 2 weeks away from trial, and all of a sudden that district attorney realizes they don't have a very good case. That's just not acceptable. And so I don't know what you do about that. I'm not the district attorney. And
Are they as understaffed as they were when Byers left?
I think both sides are understaffed.
Well, sure.
Yeah. I think you would have to double the DAs and double the PDs to make it a even playing field. I think those district attorneys do as good as they can with that crushing amount of cases they have.
Right.
And that's why they're probably not being vetted, is they're moving on from a case that's going to trial to another case. So they've got – I think in reality they have that week – you know, 8 cases that may go to trial, and they've got to decide which one to focus on.
Yeah.
And if they focus on the wrong one, you know, it's not good for them. But I want to get back to your how you help public defense, because I didn't finish that. I think we have to get, like, law schools serious about it. And when I went to law school, there was no, like, track for criminal defense. There was criminal law and evidence and criminal procedure. But if we could – if somebody was serious about public defense and serving or DA work, maybe their last year would be clinical.
Right.
And they would actually go to work to see if they liked it and get credit for it. And I would go so far as they get their tuition paid or a break, 50% of tuition. So then you're going to get more public defenders. You're going to get more district attorneys. And so I think like a tuition reduction program, something like that would help. I know we have student loan programs, but if you could, get – I think that way you get more people – from poorer communities and people who are from those communities, minorities becoming lawyers, and not just from the upper class.
And the third year of law school, I mean, I went a zillion years ago, and I was told by other lawyers that were honest about it, the third year, it's nonsense. People just insist on still having 3 years. I went through it. You got to go through it.
Yeah. That first year is the hard one.
Yep. The first year, you're learning a whole new language or a whole new way of thought.
Yes.
And some people take some time doing that. But, and it's also for lawyers, whatever they're going to do, the weakness coming out of law school is they can tell you this law and this case and Tinhorn versus Buckley in 1923, but they're not advocates. They don't know how to play the game, how to perform.
No, for the most part, they've been professors for a long time in there.
Right.
They didn't have – some of them had no practical experience before they became professors. We had one guy who was the evidence professor. He was a very good trial lawyer, and then he – but I went to William Mitchell, which has always been proud of hands-on. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't –
better. Yeah.
I mean, the first year you had what you're talking about. You had the paper chase with them yelling at you and making you stand up and do Tinhorn versus Buckley. Did Tinhorn win or Buckley?
I'm just curious, what is the average pay range for a district or for a public defender?
I think right now it's about, for a beginning attorney, I think it's about 60,000 to 80,000 in that range.
Okay,
if you're more willing to go to Roswell and some of our
sure
places that need lawyers,
right?
There's offices where they're just always under siege, and Roswell's one of them.
Yeah,
and Carlsbad,
sense.
And
sure,
those places out there, and Hobbs especially. And so they get paid a geographical difference. We got a small one here for Las Cruces,
But I guess in comparison with
– but I was running the whole office.
Right.
Yeah. It would be considered anywhere else in a company, upper management.
Sure.
I was making 140.
Right.
Which to me, line attorneys in Minnesota make 180,000. So there's – you got somewhere else where there's a disparity. I had one of my former colleagues, she moved to Oregon. She was making 180 just right away as a line attorney. So I know we're not, economically the most wealthy state, but we at least have to address that pay disparity. But I would like to link it to the DAs.
That makes
a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And then when Mr. Macias goes to the legislature and asks for more pay for the DAs, we're like, yeah, give them more pay.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I know this is off the subject of basically, understaffing and all that,
mm-hmm.
but you've just quit after a lot of years doing what you've been doing.
Yeah, 30 years I've been a lawyer and about half of it was public defender work.
What did you most love about it and what did you most hate about it?
I loved being with people who were of the same mind and brainstorming, and I loved the clients. I loved helping poor people, people that are trodden on and they don't have a lot of hope. And when you get the right client, it gets to your heart. It's heartwarming work. Fighting for justice, I've done civil work, and it's all about money. If you've mm-hmm. ever done civil work and that's just draining to your soul. So I loved that about it. I think the thing I hated about it was just there was – every day I'd go to work, there was a surprise. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a pleasant surprise. It was like a judge has scheduled a pretrial release, right. and you're just scrambling. And so the constant scrambling was stressful, and I don't have that anymore. I can feel the stress.
By the way, you can fight for justice a little in civil cases.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, no, I'm going to – by the way, my plug for my new law firm is I am doing civil rights and personal injury and criminal defense. So,
and again, we're talking with recently out of government.
Yes.
Chris Knudsen. Yeah.
Well, he wanted to say retired, but yeah. I'm not retired. Yeah. I'm retired from government. There you go.
Right. Well,
and real quickly, beyond just funding, what are there anything else we could do to improve the system to make it better?
More jobs, better economy.
Yeah. So it is the
because funding. I mean we. When I recently, we're different cities, we're more. But I looked at Albuquerque, and they have business districts with all these little businesses and all this stuff where you can work. And I was like, you know, my gosh, there's just. I mean, they're really attracting new businesses and things like that. So right. I think you got to just work on getting more business development in here and jobs, yeah. and then people have somewhere to work.
Yeah. Well, thanks again, and we'll have you back with Fernando Macias. if he doesn't want to come, I think he will, by the way. But if he doesn't want to come, I'll play Fernando, and we'll have a debate. But you've
almost got the hair for it.
Oh, I thought you meant you were going to play Fernando by ABBA.